WPFW, Washington.
And welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with
Terry D. Kester, the doctor of Garland Nixon.
And we are the Raucous Caucus.
I guess I'm the nurse of the democracy if you're the doctor.
If that's what you choose.
And I just simply ignore the doctor.
Ignore the doctor.
And go my own way. You are listening
to the patient. That's
WPFW 89.3 FM. We are in studio tonight. If you wanted to see us live at Ben's, you're just going to have to wait one more week. We will be there.
You could bring us a sandwich. I mean, we're sitting here, you know.
We'll be here next week at Ben's Next Door. In fact, we're there every second and fourth Tuesday. So if you want to meet us in person, you have to wait a week. But if you wanted to call in and participate in the show, tonight is your lucky night. You just pick up the phone and dial 202.
Does that mean Garland has to call in to get his time on the air?
I guess I better go get my cell phone.
Yeah, you better.
Be right back, guys.
Yeah. Okay, you just call in and dial 202-588-0893, and you can join in the conversation and be almost as raucous as we are. If you're too raucous, I don't know, the building might explode. So, gentlemen. Well, gentlemen and Terry.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Don't leave Terry out. That's
wait,
unfair.
Wait, it's the other way around. Gentlemen and Garland.
Gentlemen, I'll be nice to you, Terry.
Thank
gentlemen,
you, thank you.
We have three topics tonight. Two are very much in the news. All three are important. The first topic is the one you've probably seen most in the news lately, having to do with Guantanamo Bay and military tribunals there. We'll get back to that. We'll start with that one. Number two is a topic that's a little more obscure, but I still think very important. I think it's the camel's nose under the tent, the decision by the Supreme Court to allow Arizona to let you divert your tax payments to religious schools and presumably other religious institutions.
Camel's nose under the tent.
That's, I like that. When the camel's nose under the tent.
That's right. You got to watch out. Soon it goes over two humps.
Now, this sounds more like Jurassic Park. I think the T-Rex's nose under the tent.
Are we going to be talking about more appropriate camel nose metaphor. Fungus then? I mean, we didn't talk about bat nose fungus. So I just
the third topic, gentlemen.
Trying to help here.
Is the so-called budget crisis, which may lead to a not so-called but an actual government shutdown
and a depression
after Friday. Yeah. And the fact that the two parties are fighting so much over $30 billion or $60 billion, they're basically fighting over which toothpicks to remove from a roaring fire.
Except for Ryan's bill.
Well, we're going to talk about that too.
Holy cow.
Ryan's bill to basically end Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid as we know it, which we didn't need anyway because no one in America ever gets old or sick.
He throws old and poor people actually into the fire and uses them for fuel.
Use them for fuel. So we got a lot to talk about with both of us and, of course, with our listeners, 202-588-0893. Let me start with Guantanamo Bay because the very first act our President Barack Obama did, the day he became president, he signed an executive order saying he would close Guantanamo Bay within a year, and he would bring the people there to either civilian trials or, if they weren't guilty of anything, to let them go. He was going to close down this stain on American democracy. And he tried. He got, I think, like five to go to other countries. I think the Uyghurs, who are just this Muslim Chinese group that got wrapped up in the conflict, and they're like, who are we and why are we in Guantanamo Bay? I think they went to some island in the South Pacific. I forget exactly what they were. Anyway, but so he got a few out there, and then Eric Holder was building the case for the most severe, the people we think actually are guilty, though they still need a trial, I would argue, under our system of justice. But Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, some of the guys that we think are the really bad guys, and he was preparing a case against them and preparing to bring them to New York City to have them tried right there at the place they committed the crime. And Congress passed a bill. Democrats and Republicans, mostly Republicans, but certainly some Democrats, passed the Defense Authorization Bill that said, sorry, Attorney General Eric Holder, you can't use any money to transport the prisoners from Guantanamo Bay to America for trial.
Can they walk on their own?
Or float.
Yeah, right, get their own boat.
It's fascinating to me. Yeah. Here, the
maybe
president,
they can catch a cab or something like that. Amtrak.
You know, yeah. I'll bet you there are some New York cab drivers that would do that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, look, the president controls the military, which has military tribunals. The president controls the Justice Department, which is supposed to prosecute these guys.
That's a stretch.
That the president controls the he's supposed to.
Theoretically, yes.
He's Attorney General Eric Holder's boss.
It's a stretch.
He appointed him.
Yeah, it's a stretch. But anyway,
friends.
It's not like the military, but go ahead.
In any case, supposedly, the president could transfer them from one to the other, but Congress said no, you got to do it our way.
You got to do it on your own money. If Obama wants to pay for it, he can do it, right?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously Congress has the power of the purse, and they
just use that to
impinge on what is the president's natural right. In any case, Eric Holder said, all right, you win, and very glumly said, I was right all along. You and Congress are wrong, but I got to do what you say.
That's true.
So, Terry?
Perception is reality, Mark. And I don't like that fact, but it is generally a fact. And to try to bring these guys to trial in the United States with what people think of our justice system, they don't really know much about it, but what they see on TV and everything else, and they always hear of people getting off on technicalities and all that nonsense, they don't realize that for the most part the justice system works fairly well, you know, in the courts and trials, and if you go through that process. And so the people wouldn't trust it. The American people would not trust it under any circumstances. I'm sure they would. Certainly not in New York City.
I know you won't be surprised to find that I disagree with you, but
I
want to hear Garland first before I tell you why.
The other thing I think is of concern is this. You know, I felt all along that if we go by the norms of our justice system,
our Constitution, our Bill of Rights,
in all likelihood, these people were subjected to acts that would
torture.
Yes, that would cause most of the information that and the evidence that would be used against them to be thrown out of court.
So in reality,
mm-hmm. if Mark or I or Terry mm-hmm. were sitting there and we heard these things and Mark's a lawyer, but Terry and I, how difficult is it to figure out that if a person is tortured, that in all likelihood that the any evidence against them used as a result of that torture is illegal, is inadmissible, and is excluded from evidence in court. So they couldn't, in reality, I don't see how they could have possibly tried them in a court without getting everything thrown out. And let me add one more thing. And, I mean, let's be honest, it's fairly obvious that there are at least some people there who had a hand in terrorist activities. Do you really want, in all honesty, to say, well, let's do things right. This guy, you know, probably tried to kill 100,000 people, and it would kill 100,000 more if he got an opportunity. Okay, we just throw our hands up in the air and say, send him on about his merry way.
You raised some very good points. The problem is that Barack Obama is now trying to let two wrongs make a right.
This isn't the first time for him to do that.
The original wrong is, of course, George W. Bush authorized torture, authorized waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and at least a couple other of these I won't call them gentlemen, but of these people.
That's all they are at this point. They're accused.
The accused. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, Garland, that in our system of justice, any confessions obtained by torture have got to be thrown out if we've got to distinguish ourselves from Soviet-style justice or dictatorships or anywhere else in the world where they torture confessions. So we have to throw those out.
This is a political decision.
Let me say this. Holder says... And I believe him. I mean, look, whatever you want to say about Holder, I mean, he's a smart man, and I think he knows how to build a case. Eric Holder says that we could separate the torture confessions, that we could, totally on the basis of extrinsic evidence that had nothing to do with those awful torture confessions, bring a case in civilian court. He even unsealed the indictment that had been sealed, it was secret, until he basically gave up the case, to say, we could have done this in a civilian court. I would have liked to have seen it done in a civilian court, and I'll tell you why. I disagree with you, Terry, that New York couldn't handle it. Let me tell you something. I live in Alexandria, Virginia. We tried Zacharias Moussaoui in Alexandria, Virginia, and I don't recall the citizens of Alexandria, Virginia getting up in arms and saying, oh, no, there's a terrorist in our midst in a jail, locked in a jail in our
cell. No, I don't mean that. I mean, this is a political decision. This is not a legal decision. I'd like to believe it's a legal decision. It's a constitutional decision, et cetera. It has nothing to do with that. It is strictly politics. The American people still have this gut reaction that our court system doesn't work, and to put these men on trial in an American court system would not bring them to justice.
We tried Richard Reid, life in prison. We tried Zacharias Moussaoui, life in prison. We tried Timothy McVeigh, got the death penalty.
You're talking about 9/11.
Well, Zacharias Moussaoui is 9/11.
Yeah, he was 9/11. He was
supposedly the 20th hijacker. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty serious.
Right.
But this is the guy that supposedly, you know, is planning it and everything else.
Him and give him the death penalty, but let's give him a trial under our Constitution. Let me tell you why.
I agree with you in principle.
As far as I'm concerned, if we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt using extrinsic evidence that he planned to kill 3,000 Americans, I'm fine with the death penalty, so you and I can disagree on that one.
I agree with you completely, Mark. It should be done that way, but it is a political decision, and at this point there's not a congressman or a president, we only got one up there, willing to sacrifice one single vote.
You're right that Holder felt like he had to do what no way Congress is going to re-vote with a Republican House of Representatives to try these guys. So you're right that it is what it was, and Eric Holder, I don't really blame
him.
I don't think
Obama would push for it. He didn't push for it.
Well, you're right. You know, he didn't push for
once
it.
Once again, he backed down.
But would it have made a difference after Congress voted if he pushed or not?
The argument is he could have done it before Congress voted. That in that year, if he tried it more quickly, if they brought him to New York, maybe before Congress voted.
Yeah.
That's the argument. But I agree. Once Congress voted, there was nothing he could do.
I think politically, Obama was perfectly happy to find a way out of bringing
him
here.
That may well be true. But let me deal, though, with what Congress did, because it's not just about the administration here. I'm upset with Congress. I'm upset with the Democrats in Congress. What is the harm of taking this evil man, if what is alleged to be true
the
is
accused.
True?
Remember, the accused. He's the accused.
Innocent until proven guilty. But what is the harm of having the victims, the people who lost their loved ones in this act of mass murder, face the person who they believe committed this crime, the evidence shown beyond a reasonable doubt, the jury go and decide and convict, and if they do the death penalty, then the whole world knows that this man had a fair trial and deserves to die.
But can you imagine, and I mean, this is America, you know, and we're a little crazy. I mean, we really are.
A little?
A little. Can you imagine I know you don't like this, but here you are, you're going to have to defend this guy, right? So you're the lawyer charged.
Some trial lawyer will defend him.
Yeah, I know. Sure. He'll try. Maybe even some famous would. There are so many conspiracy theories out there that they would try to get admitted into court, you know, that you would not get a trial.
Zacharias Moussaoui had a fair trial in federal court in Alexandria, Virginia. And not only did he get convicted, but he only got 11-1 vote on the death penalty.
But you see, that wasn't based on this whole idea of, is Obama going to close Guantanamo or not?
Right.
That's the whole issue that they're talking about here. I mean, it's not just this guy. It's about whether we're going to keep Guantanamo or not. And Obama has basically said also, well, maybe we need it.
Well,
he hasn't quite said that yet.
You know, I don't think he said we need it, but a couple things. I do tend to think that... let's face it, if somebody commits a particular, you know, murder or serial killer or a child serial murder or whatever in a particular town or city, they're still going, unless they ask for a change of venue or whatever, but they're still going to get tried in that area where people are angry or upset. So I don't think it would have been unreasonable.
They could try it in Arlington. Alexandria.
Right. The only issue there is, of course, as I said, the evidence as a result of torture. But if they had enough evidence outside of
that's
that,
what
and
the
they
attorney
felt
general
they
still don't think
then,
it would, it wouldn't work.
I'm fine.
There'd have to be a change of venue. I mean,
why? Well, why should New Yorkers be able to render judgment on the man who?
But
you have to, Mark. I would be willing to wager. Wouldn't you certainly think that his attorney would ask for a
change
of venue?
Sure, he would.
And then he would, in fact, be awarded a change of venue.
You know what? I don't care if he gets one.
Yeah.
Think Americans across the country.
They gave it a shot anyway.
I believe in our system.
Schenectady.
I believe in our jury system.
Kansas City.
I believe
Sheboygan.
In
Sheboygan.
It sounds funnier. Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
I don't know that we want to try him in Sheboygan. No, look, I believe, I think Americans can be fair. I think they can give a fair trial. I think our Constitution, our Bill of Rights have worked for 220 years. And here's the problem I fear. Even more than Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I really fear the precedent. The reason why George Bush set up Guantanamo Bay, let's all remember, is because he wanted a place where our Constitution did not apply. So he took this island.
He thought that was the entire United States. He thought it was everywhere, it didn't apply.
Cuba, it doesn't apply. Well, Anybody knows that.
Happens is Guantanamo Bay is this wonderful no man's land where it's technically Cuba, but we have a lease forever. Not look, a 99 year lease. Right, yeah. You know, we have a lease. For the next 99 million years.
Yeah,
you know. So to me, if I get to own something for 99 million years or forever, it's mine. It's not a lease.
Mark, when the American people let Bush get away with torture, violation of everything in our system, violation of everything in our Constitution, violation of everything in the Geneva Convention and international law, when the American people said, well, we don't care, the battle was lost there.
Yeah.
That's why we have to close Guantanamo Bay. There can be no world that is fully controlled by America that is not under American law and American system of fair trust.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. What do you think about this? Because I tend to think this is not a defense nor an attack.
At the break.
I thought you were talking about breaking Mark. I thought you were break. I thought you had a little.
Dave and I are having a conversation.
I thought you were talking about breaking.
Terry,
you pointed the
Garland
you,
finish.
You
go
pointed
ahead,
the mark and you like did a little break thing, like you were snapping
go
his
on,
neck
go
or
on,
something.
Go on, go on.
Oh, wait. Okay. Oh, wait.
We're gonna take phone calls after the half hour.
Yes, we are. But they can call it and hang.
202-588-8.
Okay. So we'll get to you, George.
Where were we? All of these things about breaking Mark's neck. You guys lost me.
It's Dave's fault.
Oh, I tend to think not a defense nor an attack, just a statement. I tend to think, feel to some extent that President Obama came in and said, I'm closing Guantanamo Bay. And then one of the things I think he found out was just how difficult it was because you can't get other countries to take the people. You're having difficulty.
We got five in the South Pacific.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You send them to a nice island.
We must have paid a lot of money to get
that.
What
are we going to drop them off on, like, an island, you know, dessert, like Gilligan's Island kind of thing? There with the, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, here's the thing. Wrapped up at Guantanamo Bay, I'm sure, are some very evil, dangerous people, some mildly dangerous people, and probably some people that are caught up and have no reason to be there, and we are putting them in indefinite detention.
Yeah. Yep.
And you know what? That is un-American.
I agree.
That is un-American, and I don't even care what the polls say. That is un-American. Under our Constitution, you get rid of habeas corpus, you got to prove the reason that you're there, or you get free. And look, to me, it's not even the issue of military tribunals or civilian trial. I'd prefer a civilian trial. I'm not saying that the military can't be fair, but this precedent that we can somehow take our prisoners and put them someplace where American law doesn't apply is a very, very dangerous precedent.
Isn't that called
Mark
Arizona?
My words. Well, we're going to talk about Arizona. That's a nice segue.
And that is, you know, something I remember was interesting that Al Sharpton said when someone mentioned, you know, leaving Iraq with dignity. And Al Sharpton said, we can't because we lost our dignity when we went in.
Yeah.
And,
that's right.
You know, there are times when you open it, you open something that can't be closed. And when Guantanamo was created, you know, the issues and problems that were created were so great.
Yeah, no, Obama was dealt a raw deal.
Yeah, I'm hard pressed to take what George Bush did and screwed this thing up so bad and created this monster. I'm hard pressed. I may say, well, I would prefer that Barack Obama did this or that, but I'm hard pressed to throw all of that in his lap and say, you know something, this guy created an unfixable problem, and I'm mad at you because you
well,
didn't.
You don't have to throw it in Obama's lap, but you got to throw it in the American people's lap.
I agree.
Let's face it.
And they voted for that guy in 2004 after all that crap.
Yeah.
Even if Eric Holder is right, and I think he is, that there was enough to prove for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, even though he was tortured, enough extrinsic evidence. The problem is with some of those people in Guantanamo Bay that we thought they were bad, we tortured them, they confessed they were bad, and now we know they're bad, and yet we can't try them because their torture confession goes out the window, and we can't let them free because we know they're bad. And you're right, Obama's in a catch-22.
And be honest with you, tortured me, I confess that I was bad.
Now let's move on to Arizona.
The threat of torture, I would admit that I was bad.
I lived in Phoenix for 1 year and I got out fast.
Did you move to Texas?
No, I moved to Colorado.
For once, I'm not talking about Arizona's immigration policy. I'm talking about a law that was recently upheld by the United States Supreme Court,
yeah,
where Arizona said, take your tax money, and if you don't want to pay it to us, you know,
the
your
hell
state,
with the Constitution.
Just pay it to a religious school,
yeah,
a church,
sure,
these approved religions, these state-approved yeah religions.
The, and, not the mosque. You can't pay it to your mosque.
No, I doubt the mosque
yeah
was on
why
that
do I
list
feel like that?
I doubt probably it was on not the list, but probably I don't know. I haven't seen the list. So the United States Supreme Court, since at least 1968...
Giving mine to an Indian reservation.
Has held...
That'll fix them.
If your tax money is going to some religious place, you have a right to say, hey, I don't want my tax money to go to that religious place. You can't do that if your tax money is going to a war, and I know Terry hates that very much.
Yes, yes, right. I do.
But,
yes,
but,
I do.
But, you know, that's because the power to have a war is allowed in the Constitution. There is no power, however. Congress shall pass no law, it says in the First Amendment, establishing, respecting an establishment,
establishment
of religion.
Clause, right.
So here it is. The Arizona is saying, oh, yeah, you wanna, don't want to give your tax money to us? Just give it to some religious institution. And the Supreme Court says, you know what? We're not going to say whether that's good or bad, but we're going to say that you can't challenge it, so we'll allow it to go through. Is this, Garland Nixon, formerly of the ACLU, is this the camel's nose under the tent?
Again, the camel?
As I said, this isn't the camel's nose under the tent. It's like Jurassic Park, the part where the T-Rex and what was it, two or three, stuck his head under the tent and wiggled it around, and the tent flew, and then he ate some people and stepped on them. That's pretty much what's going on. You know,
thanks
where?
For the image.
Yeah, what goes on here? I mean, you know, what would be interesting would be this. If all the people in Arizona said, you know what, good idea, let's all do that, and everyone in Arizona did that, what would the Arizona government do? If the Arizona government, oh, the governor suddenly realized, you know something?
Maybe
we
they don't want a government
we don't
in
have
Arizona.
From the looks of things, they'd be better off without the better than the one they got.
Terry,
if they want anarchy,
well, you know,
let's give it a shot in Arizona and see what happens.
What are your thoughts?
They'll come crawling back.
The distortion on this is what disturbs me the most. And it's, again, the same pattern as the Guantanamo thing. We just keep on distorting what we can and can't do and what is moral, what is constitutional. And Kagan, as Supreme Court Justice Kagan pointed out, appropriations
her,
and tax...
Her first writing, by the way.
Yeah.
This is her
yes,
first
right,
writing
her first
on the court
opinion,
in
yeah
dissent.
Yeah, and all the other three that dissented signed on to it.
Clinton's which, and Obama's
yeah
appointments.
She said that appropriations and tax subsidies are readily interchangeable. And that's what the Supreme Court is ignoring because of the specific way that this has been set up. They're saying it's not a tax appropriation, and so therefore it doesn't apply, and they're opening the door, and other states have already grabbed on this and said, whoopee, now we can do this too, so we can collect this money, so we can support Christian schools. We call them charter schools,
you know,
but
the
they're primarily Christian schools.
I got it.
The Ku Klux Klan burns a cross.
Yeah.
Can't they
there
be a Christian?
No,
can't they have a school?
You guys are missing out on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of often, you know, there's kind of an amorphous definition of what a religion is, right?
Well, yeah.
What was the guy's name? Well, I'm not going to talk. But what if Terry and I were to decide to go to Arizona and start our own religion?
I thought we did.
I don't think you'd be on the approved list.
But well, yeah, but we could go to the Supreme Court.
And say, that's
and
right.
And we worship, what? The moon. Right. You know, can worship
but
something.
Baal.
No,
you should worship
SpongeBob.
That hasn't been a good Baal worshiper.
There we go, Baal.
Yeah.
SpongeBob.
All we'd have to do is open a charter school. And, you know, Scalia did want the 68 law repealed. I mean, he wanted a judgment that overturned the 68
but see,
law.
Which... I got to tell you, this stuff is much larger than Arizona. Right here in the
yes
District of Columbia.
You better believe it's larger.
There are a lot of people that want, a lot of people in the district that want to have these charter schools. Now, like, I'm all fine for school choice as long as it's all a,
I'm
non,
not, I'm a, totally
a non-religious
totally opposed
school.
Right.
Totally opposed. Either public education or no education.
No, no, no.
Damn it.
A non-religious school. But I have a real problem with my tax dollars going to support someone else's funky religion. You got a religion? That's terrific. Support it, believe in it, learn it. You don't interfere with my state, and my state won't interfere in your religion.
What's wrong with worshiping cactus?
You know what,
John? Or cacti, you know, I mean, with the plural.
Are we
cactus
gonna, I hate to
you're welcome to worship your cactus, but I don't want my taxes going to your cactus.
Well, speaking of tax,
no taxes for cactus.
You would. Speaking, oh, gosh.
Speaking.
I didn't see that one coming.
Speaking of taxes, were we going to get to the budget
we
before
we
the
are,
half hour?
We are.
We've only got 4 minutes.
Terry, you are Mr. Segway.
Oh,
all right.
Mr. Segway.
All right.
That's right. Dr.
Let's,
Democracy
let's get,
and Mr. Segway.
Let's get to the third and arguably the most important of all three.
I thought taxes for cactus was pretty darn strong.
Thank you.
There.
That was
a strong segment.
You know, hey.
I'm worried about the bat fungus.
People are going to think we practice this. All right. Now, we all know that the huge, massive fight over the budget, the one that's going to cause the government to shut down, and probably will. I actually think it's going to happen.
Oh, there's no question in my mind.
I think it's going to happen.
Good.
Is over good. See, you. We'll get to you in a minute, Trey.
We'll deal with his the likes of him.
It is over far, far less than 1% of the deficit. All right, sure. We're talking about a tiny, tiny piddling
over
Ryan. The government. We're going to get to Mr. Ryan. One second. This is about fiscal year 2011, which started last October. It is half over. All right? And so the Republicans, their Tea Party wing, first the Republicans said, we'll do about $33 billion. And the Democrats said, no, that's way too much. And then they said, well, we want $61 billion. And then the Democrats said, okay, we'll give you $33 billion. And now the Republicans say, no, we moved the ball. Yeah. We want
They're moving
the
line in the sand further.
What do they really want? They really want to cut pup. They want to cut the
everything.
Everything. They want to cut NPR. They want to cut PBS. They want to cut Planned Parenthood and all it does for women. They want to cut this one. Really, I think should affect all Americans. The EPA, because God knows we need more arsenic in our water and more pollution in our air. We just if you can't see and eat the air, it's
then
just
what good is it?
Not.
What
I'm
good
tired
is
of looking up and actually
air.
Seeing the sun. I don't want to see it anymore.
We need
I want a black,
more smog.
That's right.
We
a do. Black we smoky. Cloud.
We need more smog. So this is the Republican plan. The Democrats are saying, whoa. And, of course, the heart of the matter is, and this gets to the next point, which is Paul Ryan's budget that's issued today, is that the only real difference, the main difference, 90% of the difference between Bill Clinton's massive surplus in 2000 and the massive deficit we have today, the massive deficit we had under George Bush, it's really only three things. One, the taxes changed. Mm-hmm. Two, our Pentagon budget increased 120%, mm-hmm. only half of which, by the way, relates to Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
The third is the recession. There's some other stuff, corporate
healthcare. You got to include healthcare.
And it's possible the first two caused the third, but go on.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right, the lack of regulation. So all you have to do is go back to the Bill Clinton days and have the millionaires and billionaires pay. You want to know a quick way to get not $30 billion, not $60 billion, but $70 billion every single year? Just make the millionaires and billionaires pay the same rates they paid under Bill Clinton. Boom! I fixed your problem, guys!
Tea Party,
you with me?
No, they're not acceptable because
let me tell you something here.
Money for things.
This is far more important than even the fiscal matter. I mean, it's really not about the budget, and it's not about the deficit, and it's not about debt. Those are issues that need some correction, to be sure. But what we're really seeing here, which really scares the hell out of me, it really honestly does. Anytime any society starts to create enormous income inequality,
that's what we're doing.
It creates a situation of fear, and fear and greed working off each other. During the 90s or up until the crash, you know, we just had greed, basically.
Look at any third world country.
Yeah, now we have fear and greed. And this country is chewing on itself. It really honestly is. And I think the consequences of, to begin with, this is not about 2011.
But Terry, middle class people still have their homes. And the Koch brothers need more billions.
Even if they get past this nonsense battle that they're having now, it'll be right up again in 2012. The same battle.
Way bigger.
You better believe it'll be way bigger.
Social contract.
And it'll be way uglier.
Because it'll
be more destructive. And this country, unless the progressives and the liberals and the Democrats hold Obama's feet to the fire and he takes leadership of this issue, which he has refused to do, we are in deep, deep trouble.
Oh, come on, Garland. We don't really need Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid anymore. I mean, they've only lasted 80 years, right? We will never have old or sick people again.
Well, you know, Terry's brought some very, very strong points tonight. The last one being, I know we get ready to go to break, and that is the people, the working people, the working class, the working poor, the progressives, the liberals, etc. And he said holding Obama's feet to the fire. And he mentioned earlier what we allowed Bush to do. You know, a big problem is we got this little teeny, teeny group of people called the Tea Party dragging this country around.
Yep.
But the people who feel like you and Terry and I, they sit on their butts too much. They won't get together. They won't unite. Yep. They won't work together. But they'll gripe and cry.
They're scared.
And argue. Yeah.
They're scared. And this is crucial. Yeah. This
and they
is
won't
crucial.
Well, let's hear from some of those people.
They won't take to the streets, will they?
They better.
Let's hear from you. 202-588-0893. You can talk about any of these three topics, Guantanamo Bay, the budget, or the Supreme Court decision on separation of church and state. 202-588-0893. This is the Rockets Caucus. I am Mark Levine with
Terry D. Kester,
Garland Nixon.
And we'll be right back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C.
WPFW is proud to be the media sponsor for the Kennedy Center 2010-2011 Jazz Series. Friday, April 8th, Javon Jackson and Friends returns to the Kennedy Center Jazz Club for shows at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. On Saturday, April 9th, Randy Weston's African Rhythms heat up the Terrace Theater at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. On Friday, April 15th, Ben Williams takes the stage at the Kennedy Center Jazz Club for performances at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. Eldar rounds out April's offerings with an appearance at the Kennedy Center Jazz Club. Performances are at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. Go to kennedy-center.org to find out about other exciting performances. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, serving the collective needs and imagination of the community.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is 89.3 WPFW. I am Mark Levine with
Terry D. Kester.
And Garland Nixon.
And we are
the Raucous Caucus.
And we have a lot to talk about tonight, whether it's the decision on Guantanamo Bay, whether it's Supreme Court decision on allowing your tax money to go to religious schools or any religious institution, or whether it's the overall budget, whether it's real or fake, and where that all takes us. There's a lot to talk about, but because there's a lot to talk about, I'm going to restrict your comments to those three topics. TESFA, welcome to the show. Welcome back, I should say, since you're a regular caller. How are you, sir?
All right. How are you?
Wonderful.
We're good. We're good.
What are your thoughts on one of those topics?
I had a lawyer with me a moment ago. A lawyer by training, but not practicing right now. And she was commenting, saying that there shouldn't be any difference between these criminals and the criminals who blew up the federal building in
Oklahoma City.
Somewhere mm-hmm. Midwest,
right, Timothy
McVeigh. Oklahoma City, right.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Okay. Yes.
That's what she said. My question is, does the U.S. justice system has jurisdictions over serious crimes all around the world? If so, how can we bring criminals like Mullah Zenawi, who has killed thousands and thousands, and Paul Kagame of Rwanda, who has his hand in the killing of millions of people? How can we do that? At least two of you are lawyers by training. I know
it's
that
just
for
one
sure.
Of the three of us.
He counts you as two people.
I'll tell you, TESFA, we don't have what's called universal jurisdiction.
No, not at all.
There is no law that lets us try anyone for doing any awful thing.
You mean we're not the world police?
Not in a legal sense.
You're right, yeah. We just think we're the world police.
Sometimes we want to act that way.
Sometimes, every day.
The actual law is that a crime has to be done either in America or to Americans.
Or to Americans, right.
And that's
then you
why,
have to extradite people unless you render them, which is a new way of doing it.
Which is why, in fact, we can try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the others in Guantanamo Bay in America.
Did we render him? Harmed
Americans. And if they're just, I don't know, like one guy, I think it was the cook, the chef.
Did we
for
render
some
him?
Al Qaeda guy.
Yeah, right.
Did we render him?
The cook?
No. What's his name? All the controversy.
We
right
rendered
now.
A lot of people.
No, the guy, I can't even
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Yeah, did we render
no,
him?
No, we just waterboarded him. 137
times. But did we render
times.
Him? How did we catch him?
Oh, how do we catch him?
Yeah, and how do we get him in the United States?
I think it was a bear trap, if I remember correctly.
I think we got him in Afghanistan or Pakistan.
Yeah, so then we did render him. I think he stepped on a bear trap.
Well, we just took him.
I'm just wondering. We're breaking a lot of laws. We're breaking a lot of laws. I want to make sure we're breaking all of them.
All right, fair enough. Let's go on to Anthony.
Another one to miss one, would we, Terry? No.
Anthony is another regular. We often see him at Ben's Next Door, if it's the Anthony I'm thinking of. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Anthony,
Anthony, are you there? Hello, Anthony.
Oh, Anthony.
All right, we've lost
you. We lost Anthony. Call back.
Let's go to Martha. Martha it sounds like a new caller. Hi, Martha. How are you? Welcome to the Rock's Caucus.
Okay, wait, let me turn the radio down.
Yeah, please turn the radio down.
You can hear us from here.
We'll have an echo.
Yeah. I was thinking of something. Terry said Americans chewing on each other, and all of a sudden I remember the movie by Ingmar Bergman about the plague. And, you know, when the plague struck, of course, everybody was all upset. And I remember there was one scene where huge lines of people were walking around whipping themselves and whipping each other as though that this would somehow or other solve the problem. And it crosses my mind. Yeah, with all the budget crisis and everything, all these stupid budget cuts are like sadomasochism, and they're hurting the people
well
that want them, and they're hurting the people that are doing them. And it reminds me of that movie.
I'll tell you, Martha.
What a strong image. Martha.
I think it's a long practice of powers that be. And I don't care whether they're white plantation owners in the South or some kind of dictatorship in Asia or Africa or Latin America, whatever it is. People in power tend to divide and conquer. They know that they're a minority. They know that they're in power. And they know that the majority wouldn't want them in power. So divide up the majority. Make it tribe versus tribe, or race versus race, or people versus people.
Workers.
Or
public employees versus private employees.
Middle class versus the poor.
Yeah, union workers versus non-union workers.
Make us chew each other up and not notice that the multinational corporations are really in control of everything. Martha's dead on.
Yeah. And I remember that film. Thank you very much, Martha. Strong image.
All right, let's go on to Timothy. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
How are you?
Good.
Hi, Timothy. Where were you? Oh, it's Timothy, not Anthony. I'm sorry.
No, this is Timothy.
Go ahead, Timothy.
Go ahead,
Timothy. Yeah, but listening to these issues about the budget, you know, and I'm wondering how is it that the conservatives have co-opted the Judeo-Christian ethics? I mean, the whole thing about Judeo-Christianity is taking care of your fellow human beings and your neighbors. And
that's not in their Bible. Am I my brother's keeper? They got rid of that part. Part about Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man enter heaven. They removed that part.
That's Old Testament. They got rid of the New Testament part of love thy neighbor as thyself.
That's Old Testament.
New Testament. No, I mean,
that's New Testament.
All about
Leviticus.
The people who got zapped were the rich guys who held back from the community.
You know, I've never understood how all these people who talk about, you know, Christian ethics and these fundamentalist preachers, and they go on about Jesus wanted a capital gains tax cut.
Well, that's
not the Jesus that I read about.
It's very simple. It's not about studying Jesus. It's knowing that God is on your side no matter what you do. Hello, George Bush, etc. That's really what it is. Is that idea of that, you know, God's on my side because I go to the church, I've been saved, therefore if I want $1 billion and everybody else dies, that's too bad.
It's that old kind of Manichaean idea, the Manichaean principle, and that in the world, the forces of pure good are fighting the forces of pure evil.
Yeah.
And you know the problem I have with that? No matter who it is that believes that the forces of pure good are fighting the forces of pure evil, they always believe that they're on the side of the forces of pure good.
I wonder why that always
but you know
happens.
Something? George Carlin said something that was brilliant a while back. And he said, here's the difference between the right and left. The right, the left is about people. The right are about things. Mm. And when you talk about the left, you tend to say, make arguments like, but people will starve, but people will lose their jobs, but people will be thrown into the streets and freeze, but people will. And the right says, but what we need to do is we need to cut taxes because, and they'll go into some argument that has nothing to do with people.
Interesting.
And this whole idea that whatever cuts they're going to make is going to increase jobs,
you
would only believe that if you haven't studied history and understood the depression that happened in 1928, which I have the complete time
And you didn't listen to Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs said it would cost us 700,000 jobs.
And what John Boehner said, the Speaker of the House, the Republican leader, fascinating, that he was presented with a study that said that his plan would cost between 200,000 and 800,000 jobs. There were lots of studies, lots of range. And he said if it costs jobs, so be it. Direct quote.
In
other words, if the economy gets ruined and unemployment goes up and people suffer, so be it. Why? Because John Boehner knows if the economy goes bad, Obama won't be reelected.
Right. And besides,
they know that if America suffers, they'll get their way.
I've been saying that for 2 years.
And if people, you know, don't have a job and they don't have money and they don't have food, like the lady said, we can just chew on each other.
Yep. There you go. All right, Anthony apparently
like
is
Dawn
back.
Of the Dead? I saw Dawn. They were
Anthony.
Each other. No, that was totally different.
Are you there this time?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, back to Gitmo if we can for a minute.
Sure.
People quickly forget the process that led to the creation of Gitmo and led to the Gitmo being stocked with what we're calling enemy combatants. We use terms like these people were captured on the battlefield as if that's accurate. And the reality situation is we know that the Northern Alliance gave the United States individuals.
Yeah, that's right.
That, you know, we know that the individuals who were in Guantanamo Bay were not all captured on the battlefield. Yep. Were not all.
I believe KSM was in his own home.
And things along those lines. We also know that the system has failed because we've already released over half of them.
That's true, too.
Yep.
You know, so for us to have a conversation about Gitmo, that a system that was not formed under any law, did not follow any judicial process, there was no probable cause, there was no right to remain silent, these people weren't offered lawyers, they weren't allowed a speedy trial, they were tortured. To say that all of those things can happen, yet now we can ignore the past and bring them into a judicial system and bring them into a system of justice defies reality.
Which is why we have to close the whole thing down.
Anybody in Gitmo can get anything that's close to a failed trial.
Except.
It's totally impossible. And unfortunately, you know, we're basically, well, actually, those people are stuck with us.
Except.
And I think it's a total travesty. And I'm, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm glad that I'm not the president of the United States. Barack Obama was backed into a corner by the Congress. And, you know, he basically has to move the trials forward. But let's not fool ourselves into thinking that this has anything to do with justice.
I hear you, Anthony. Go ahead.
But it just, you know, there is one thing that we can't ignore, and I don't have a good solution for it, and I know the Obama administration and Holder tried to work with it. You know, you are in a different, I mean, despite all, you know how I feel about all the injustices, but even taking that into account, how do you deal with a terrorist criminal who you are pretty sure committed a terrorist act? Is it an act of war? Is it therefore a military prisoner? Is it a civil prisoner? It is something that we really haven't bothered to define to this day.
I think we do have strong constitutional standards. To me, the rule is this. Military tribunals do exist in American history, but they exist on the battlefield, and there's a reason for that. Yes. You capture a prisoner of war, and you're fighting, and you don't have time to go send him to a judge and a jury. And that makes sense, right? I mean, you're fighting in a battle. You hold someone a pen. That's military justice.
You're storming the beaches at Normandy.
You're not going to take the Nazi prisoner and say, hold on, let me take you back to New York for trial. Okay, I get that. That's fine. But it's very, very different from when you got someone completely under your control. And they're not going to, you know, join the battle again. Right. They're someone who's been there for 10 years. This is someone who, let's face it, did not come into the United States. Right? If you ordered an attack on the United States.
You know, but they're not a citizen of America.
No.
You know,
that's true.
And I mean, so applying our civil laws, I mean, it is a conundrum. I think we have to admit it is a difficult conundrum.
I don't see why our system of justice can't handle it. I mean, Eric Holder seems to think that we have proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
At this point, it could. If there was another, God forfend, another 9/11, could we handle it then?
If you want to take someone.
Not for the first year, no.
If you want to take someone where you find them, if you want to do a trial in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. in Pakistan, where you find them in the heat of the battle, to me, that's a lot closer to the military tribunals. I'm more okay with it. But to bring them to this place in Cuba, and I guarantee no crimes were committed in Cuba, to this place where George Bush says, our laws don't apply, you know, let's just take them to New York or Kansas or North Dakota. I don't care where. Let's take them to America.
Well, the laws don't apply in New York either. Look at Wall Street.
Well, that's something totally different.
But I will say this. The one thing that I don't agree with, and that is that based on everything we've said, what I don't agree with is people who get like really mad at Barack Obama and throw and say, you know, this is terrible. He's the same as George and all these things because of the decisions that he makes within this. I may not like some of them, but I think this is such a tricky situation.
It's very tricky.
God only knows, and he didn't create it.
That's true.
It's hard for me to come down hard on this guy for making a decision that God knows I wouldn't want to be in a position to have to survive and make that decision.
All right, let's
go to
sleep.
I'm
going to
ask you to solve it, Garland.
Okay.
After the show, I'll solve it in about 10, 15,
let's
20 minutes.
Let's hear from Billy. Billy, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Yes, I was. One of the problems is that the minority controls the bread.
I'm sorry.
Whoever controls the breadbasket, you know, controls the. Matter of fact, the first thing is we're all programmed, okay, to think one way or the other. You guys keep talking about terrorists and all this nonsense. But the real problem with people who don't have any money is that we take a check and money from them and turn their guns on ourselves. That's the problem.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the comment.
Let's go on to Terry. Terry, welcome to the Rockets.
Oh, I'm here.
Caucus.
I'm here. Thank you.
No, another Terry.
Oh, no, sorry.
A sensible, reasonable Terry.
That's right. A normal Terry.
Oh, yeah. Normal?
Welcome, right, normal Terry.
Other Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hello, Terry.
Hello. How are you all tonight?
Good. Talk to us.
What I would like to add to the conversation is that I think that the American people do not want to accept the fact that this is an illusion. Okay, we're really under an illusion that the people who wear these suits and ties, and if any of you all have on suits and ties, I'm not talking about you.
But we don't.
No,
but
we don't.
You're safe. We're in T-shirts.
Garland's
stuff.
New.
Right, but I mean, they're these people who look very important, and they have on these suits and ties, and this is their quote-unquote uniform. Mm-hmm. And they can do anything they want to because they congregate together and they stick together. And
just
they
tell
are
me,
very,
Terry, are you talking
very,
about Wall Street, the politicians, government, military? Who?
You right now, I'm talking about on the side of the. Let's look at the. We're dealing with the budget.
Okay.
And all of it. Let's look at the private corporations.
Okay.
Who really own the government? Mm-hmm. Who really tell the president what to do? I mean, GE didn't pay any taxes.
That's
if
right.
I'm not mistaken, from what I read.
Not at all.
ExxonMobil didn't pay any taxes. Some of these, even when you have corporations that are no longer physically located in the United States, you're asking taxpayers to subsidize them. I'm saying, to me, it looks like stick 'em up. When I see it, I don't see it like this is private corporations or this is the government and these people are important and they really have the people's interests at heart. They do not have the people's interests at heart because, I mean, even if you even think about this, well, let me just throw this one even out there. It's a game of stick 'em up because you have these people who have been in their pockets, like the Mubaraks and maybe toward the end the Gaddafis, but these people have billions and billions and billions of dollars, and every now and then they come in and do a stick up with these people, and then they take this money, and you say, "Wow, what's going to happen to $70 billion from Mubarak if, in fact, frozen assets?" So when I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, what am I seeing, no matter if we're talking about the government, and I can run down a whole bunch of anecdotes on that end, or we're dealing with the private corporations. I mean,
I'll tell you something, Terry.
I just simply, it's an illusion, and the big one to me is that the FDIC is bankrupt. So, but people are walking around in these suits and these ties, and they give us this illusion that there's something real going on, and there is nothing real going on here. But cops,
it sounds like to me, Terry, that you're saying the emperor has no clothes on.
But she's also pointing out,
Terry, that was me. Never mind.
Put your clothes on.
Oh, geez, guys.
No, but Terry's making
it was
a
drafty
good,
in here.
A good point that there are people, you know, when Paul Ryan puts up a budget, who does he go after? He goes after
the poor.
Medicaid, the poor. He goes after the elderly, right. Social Security. He goes after the sick. He goes after, back to the person who brought up Christianity.
A lion always goes after the weak and the sick and the herd, buddy.
Exactly. And if you go after Christianity, he goes after exactly the people that Jesus cared about. The old, the sick, the hungry, the poor.
That's who a predator goes after.
That's exactly right.
Weed the sick and the poor out.
And Terry's point is that they're not going after the guys in suits. They're not going after the
corporate. No, of course not.
They're not going after the people with power. Because let's face it, people with power can fund a candidate that can get unelected.
People in power will always pick on the weakest people. Always.
Obviously.
And until the people, whether it's in Libya or whether it's in United States of America, until the people stand up and say no.
Like in Wisconsin.
Yay, Wisconsin.
It's a good
start. The people
it's
who
a good start.
Against.
At least they had the guts to get out there.
You know, we may well.
Yeah, I love it.
I've already
Me
sent
too.
Money to the recall campaign. I hope everyone listening to my voice has as well. Wouldn't that be just a wonderful ending?
Oh, to recall that.
Well, first you recall the Republicans, and they got to wait till next year.
Can
to
I say
them.
Bastard on the air?
You just did.
Oh.
Let's go to RG. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good evening,
RG.
Whose decision was it to broach the Supreme Court decision.
Mine.
Mark.
Thank you. Oh, good. I didn't know he was going to like me or hate me for that.
I just flipped over and said, I'm going to read the thumbnail on the case, and I looked at a syllabus online. You're speaking of the Arizona Christian Mission Organization versus Wynn?
That's exactly the case.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, boy, you really, really, really got the fire burning tonight.
Okay. Tell us where your fire lies.
We have been successful.
I'll tell you what. I think that... no, let me ask you, what's your opinion on it, Mark?
My opinion is that you cannot have government-funded religion, period.
And you cannot separate how money taken from the citizens is distributed and call it one thing they can therefore do something else with.
It's not just that it hurts those of us who aren't of that religion. It also, I think, harms a religion to be seeking money from the government. Now, I know the case. Now, the case is that the private person decides where the money goes
and
instead of paying their tax money. You know what? If people want to give charity to their church of their choice, that's fine. But don't take it from the tax dollars.
And guess what? And that falls in line with the neo-Confederates, the radical individualists that you hear all the time. My tax dollars. Mm-hmm. They don't want their tax dollars to go into the whole group.
To take care of anybody else.
So we can help people who need it. You know, those people, we don't want to help those poor and those people that, you know what I mean? So it's that whole radical individualism. I want my money to go where I want. Terry, we don't want our money to build a destroyer or a nuclear weapon, do we?
It's fine.
But for some reason, we can't
You and I can't do that.
Terry and Garland versus the U.S. military.
I'm not allowing you anywhere near any armed systems. I'm telling you both now. Particularly not Terry.
We're turning them off.
Hey, I'm strictly for people. I'm not for arms.
Let's go to Najee. Najee,
I like people who have arms. Everybody should have arms.
With an AK-47.
I mean, two of them.
Sorry.
I mean, talking about actual arms.
Najee.
They're for hugging. Arms are for hugging.
Let Najee get a word in edgewise. Najee, welcome to the Rockus Caucus. Hello, Najee.
Stop Garland once he gets going.
It is hard to stop.
Arms
Garland.
Are for hugging. That's my motto. Sorry about that.
Good point. Go ahead.
Our listeners are so observant.
Go ahead, Najee.
Yeah, but in regards to the conversation about so-called terrorists in Guantanamo Bay, you know, first of all, you know, I'd say that if anybody needs to be prosecuted for terrorism, it's the commander in chief, the defense secretary, and right on down the chain of command. And anyone who could be found to be responsible for the cover-up surrounding 9/11. But you know, I know that's not what the conversation was about, so I'll just leave that there. You know, I do want to say that I don't think that it's peculiar behavior of the U.S. government to try to you know, disregard its own laws, not to mention international law. And as one of you mentioned earlier about prisoners of war and so forth, in Guantanamo Bay, they've created a situation where you know, they're not prisoners of war.
No, they're not. The
term that they use.
Detainees.
They call them enemy combatants.
I can't tell you
how many people have written on my website, but Mark, the Constitution provides for enemy combatants.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where?
Yeah.
Please show me where the words enemy combatant occurs in my Constitution. I'll give you $1,000. It's not folks.
Instance, you know, even having a military tribunal, if in terms of prisoners of war, they would still be accorded rights.
Under Geneva Convention.
Right,
consistent with the Geneva Convention.
Absolutely.
Code, you know, the Geneva Convention.
You're absolutely right.
And then we have to go after people who waterboarded them for violating the Geneva Convention.
That's true.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
If we apply the Geneva Convention, then we have war criminals in our midst.
That's true. All right, let's go on to Ben.
We can't open that door, can we?
No, we can't. Mm-hmm. Ben, welcome to the Rockus Caucus.
Donald Rumsfeld to be pushed through it.
I appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a comment. It's not directly elaborating on your topics, but I just want to say all this discussion seems to be like building a castle in thin air. It's just when the political system from the beginning is under the influence of the corporations you're always mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
How does any of this really make a difference, what we are discussing? It's
Well, for it's one thing, we're the one radio station that isn't controlled by corporations, so that's a big advantage.
That's the only reason we actually can discuss it.
I'll tell you why it makes a difference, Ben. I'll tell you honestly why. I've been doing this for 10 years at WPFW, and I will say I am discouraged by the lack of change, the lack of anger, the lack of courage on the part of progressives and liberals and Democrats.
Except those in Wisconsin.
And those of us who support the people in Wisconsin, that includes me.
But the difference it makes that sooner or later, the people of this country, of this city, of this system, are going to find out what is going on, which was what we've been talking about. Sooner or later, the information will penetrate. Sooner or later, they will react either out of being crushed or being informed or both. And there will, sooner or later, at some cost, I'm sure, be change. And if we shut up, there will never be change.
The other thing is,
I believe that firmly.
And the other thing is, you know, I don't believe, you know, this may be sound far-fetched to some people, with the level of inequality we have, economic inequality,
so extreme.
I don't believe that you can continue to have a civil society with this level of economic inequality. I think that what happened in Wisconsin is a canary in the coal mine.
Yep.
Because what happened was people got to the point where they said, hey, no more. You know, we work our butts off and the people in power are going to crush us and take everything. And I think that's the beginning. But the things that are happening now, you start taking Medicare, you start, for God's sake, they're killing Big Bird. You start doing away with the things that the people are accustomed to having, like, I don't know, food, water,
like
and
a little
roofs over their
like
heads.
A little dignity.
Before you know it, people finally will listen to Terry and I, and Mark, okay, maybe sometimes Mark, and they'll take to the street, but sooner or later...
I was just about to compliment you, Garland.
No, all jokes aside, sooner or later, people, if they won't take to the streets because Terry's screaming that they should take to the streets, they'll finally take to the streets because the pain is so bad they see no other alternative.
And Garland, if you think
you said something memorable this show, and I wonder, you said, who is it that said that Democrats care about people, Republicans care about things?
One of the most brilliant men who ever
George
lived,
Carlin?
George Carlin.
All right, well, that was a very interesting thing, because if you look at where we are today, all right, what you find is we're being drowned in things. Right? Paul Ryan doesn't say, I'm going after the poor, the sick, and the old. He says, I'm going after Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Yeah. He doesn't
and
even
he doesn't
have
even
the...
say, I'm not going to end it. He says, I'm going to reform it. I'm going to reform it by taking all the money out of it.
Not those people.
Exactly. Right. And if you look at, for example, at the tax system, a lot of people, their eyes glaze over. It's complicated. I don't understand the tax system. What did George Bush do? He cut taxes on dividends. Mm-hmm. He cut taxes
Helps
on interest.
Helps
he cut
rich.
Taxes on capital gains.
Helps the rich.
He cut taxes on estate taxes.
Helps the rich.
He wants our entire system to be funded by Social Security and Medicare taxes. Now, FICA taxes, if you make under $100,000, you know you pay 7.5%, 15% if you're self-employed.
Yep.
What you may not know is if you make $1 million, you pay 1%.
Yep.
If you make $100 million, you pay 0.0075%. You pay practically nothing. They want to do is take the tax money and everything in the Social Security, that's middle class money. That's poor people. That's hard working people's money. They want to use that to fund their wars.
They want to use that to fund their
billionaires, not the dividends, the interest, and all the things that rich people
have. Look up Dean Baker. Recent quote from Dean Baker, the activist. Many people know of him in his work. Until the American people realize that the entire system, I'm paraphrasing, the entire system, but look them up, until they realize that the entire system is gamed to reward the rich and the powerful.
Sure.
At the expense of the poor and the middle class, until they really understand that that is, in fact, what this country is doing, they will never make any progress.
They've got to realize
that first, and that's where this protest has to start.
And you know, it's funny. Every time I or Garland or we'll go on the evil channel. We'll go on Fox News.
Oh,
or something.
God.
And what they'll say is, Democrats, stop playing class warfare.
It is class warfare.
Exactly.
Right.
It's the pot calling the kettle black.
It's the biggest class warfare in the history of the world happening in this country right now, and it's going to get much, much worse.
Exactly right. And you got to call it what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's class warfare. I think it's class genocide.
Right.
By the wealthy against the poor.
You
they're wiping
up
the working people.
It.
They're why? Because the people who are on the losing side are unarmed. They're just getting slaughtered.
And they keep trying to divide us up. And you know, I'll tell you something. When a millionaire tells me that he or she is going to vote for the Republican Party, I say, you know what? You have no heart, but I at least understand it. I understand it. You're greedy. You have no heart, but you're not irrational. When a someone who makes $50,000 or $30,000 or $10,000 a year or $100,000 a year wants to vote for the Republicans, I tell him, you're not only heartless, but you're irrational.
instead of, if you think of it, instead of you have no heart, you have no brain.
That's right.
You may have a heart, but you got
but
no brain.
I wouldn't be that cruel because I know that they are afraid. I know they are afraid. And out of their fear, they
divide
think,
and conquer. Yeah, that's how it works. Right. All right, gentlemen, we are going to be next week at Ben's Next Door.
We are indeed.
Join us, fellow listeners. Please come. Please meet us. It's 1211 U Street, right next door to the famous Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yep.
And you can see Garland, Terry, and I in person. If you haven't seen us in person, you
it's
may have
a treat.
Oh, my God.
You may have no idea. Wow. Yeah, I've had people come up to us and say, wow, you look like that. I had no idea.
We're beautiful. You know, if we were a musical group, if we were a rock band.
Somebody asked Mark one week, they said, you know, I thought you were black.
That's right. Which I thought was really weird. But you know what? That's cool. That's what you can.
I have people say that to me all the time.
No, they think you're white.
My bad.
Anyway, you can Garland, if they want to reach you, how do they
Find Facebook me, Garland Nixon. I'm there.
And Terry, Facebook, if they want to find you, you're in the streets somewhere, right?
I'm in the streets, damn right. But Facebook, TD, Terry T. What is my
name? He's in Wisconsin.
Terry Kester.
Terry D. Kester. And darn it, don't forget that D.
Fair enough. You can Facebook me. I'm Mark Levine. M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E. I also will be posting tonight's show at marklevineradio.com. You can check it out there. Until then, come see us next week at Ben's Next Door.
There we go.
Good night.